Patricia Aiken was a very big help at the Bundy Ranch in securing logistics, food, water, the essentials, and then stuff that made that stuff even better, generators and freezers, stoves, things like that. So she's a great help, and at least regionally at the moment, I would certainly be calling upon her for logistical assistance and fundraising stuff if we went into somewhere near her where she could actually personally be there, although she does have the ability and contacts and the resourcefulness to operate outside of her own area as well. So I've sent her a OMD application, and then whenever we get that back, we can review it. What she's going to come on specifically to talk with us about today, very briefly, is a crowdsourcing venture in order to bring some funding into either OMD or BTFA, depending on the outcome of our discussion after she kind of gives us an outline of how the one that she's familiar with works. So that'll be happening in 5 minutes, I guess.
Yeah, and we'll just, you know, she'll do presentation questions and answers, and Ryan and I agree that we should not get into discussion about it until after she's off the phone call.
Yeah, I forwarded her in an email, so she knows she's going to basically present us with the basics of it, and then we'll discuss it ourselves. So that is that one. Let's see. I'm working from a from my phone here once again, so I'm moving about. There we go. Okay, so the road trip itself, it's probably going to take me beyond Patricia coming online here to explain it, although a brief synopsis is pretty easily had. Basically, the road trip that was planned for from last Monday to tomorrow has been either postponed and we're just going to rearrange the dates. I've contacted the folks that the meetings were supposed to be with to let them know that we couldn't make it this week, and they were all fine with that. Of course, Lavoie Finicum was, he said, bring whoever you bring, and we've got beds, and we'll do some riding around and stuff. So they're definitely in anticipation of us coming, but we had some conflicts of scheduling going on that didn't allow the guys who were supposed to give me a ride down there to make it, so we'll have to put that off. As far as everything else goes, the November timeline going out to Northern California and such, that meeting's still on schedule up to this point. So let's see. You guys have any specific questions on that road trip stuff? I mean, I can go into more detail, but it's not really all that important, I guess.
No, I'm good.
Okay, so I see we got the Hammond brothers in Oregon. What's going on there is, let's see, Mr. Dwight Hammond is the owner of a ranch, and he, as far as I know, he let the BLM know that there was going to be a controlled burn on his property. It was supposed to be on his property only, but it jumped a fire barrier or a fence, and it ended up burning, I believe it was 123 acres of BLM land. Now, it's all open grazing land, so there's no infrastructure or anything like that anywhere near it. And as I'm sure you're familiar with, all that grazing land burning down probably was more healthy for it the following year, as it reinvigorates the soil. And at any rate, a little burn every now and then is a good thing for especially for pasture land. At any rate, this, and I believe this happened about 12 years ago, this whole incident.
2001 was the fire.
What's that?
2001 was the fire. They were charged with the crime and indicted in 2012, 11 years later.
Yeah, and they were indicted on what Mr. Hammond equated
conference
to be a terror.
Conference recording started.
Mr. Hammond equated the charge, from what he could tell, and he's the one being charged, so I guess I have to take him at it, but to some form of a terrorism charge. Is that, did you find that as well in that those documents, Gary?
Well, the original, the what he was cited under 18 U.S. Code 844F1 was part of Terrorism and Death Penalty Act from 1996. Now, I didn't go review the Death Penalty Act, but I looked at F11, and here's what it how it reads. Whoever maliciously damages or destroys or attempts to damage or destroy by means of fire or an explosive any building, vehicle, or other personal or real property in whole or in part owned or possessed by or leased to the United States or any department or agency thereof, or any institution or organization receiving federal financial assistance, shall be imprisoned for not less than 5 years and not more than 20 years and fined under this title or both. Now, what's even more interesting about that is 18 U.S. Code 844 is titled penalties. So it doesn't create a crime. Normally, the penalties are put in here with reference back to a criminal act, but there's no reference to a criminal act here except in the wording of the penalty. But that's, it says maliciously damage or destroy, but what I've found is the instructions the judge will give to the jury will not include the word maliciously. And whether it damaged real property or not, I'm a surveyor, and real property is defined as the property itself, buildings, and any crop of value, which could include trees, corn, or corn or anything else, but weeds would normally not be considered a valuable a part of the real estate. They're a nuisance. So it's interesting that they got the conviction, and I guess going further on the conviction, the Dwight, the older one, the father, was given 3 years. 3 months, and the son was given 1 year in the court because the judge felt it was cruel and unusual punishment to go with the 5 years. And so the federal government just fairly recently appealed and wanted the entire 5 years stuck on both of them. And just a few days ago, the court ruled that they get the 5 years. So if you look at their property, too, I've got maps of the property. They have a fairly large holding, whether it's 480 or 1,000 acres. I'm not sure yet. I haven't gone that far into it. But it's completely surrounded, with the exception of relatively small parcels, by BLM land, very much like Clive and Bundy's was. And it looks like the government is just trying to infill their BLM land that surrounds the ranch that's been there since 1891. So it's land thing.
Yeah.
And what they're basically saying, a $400,000 fine to the cost of the fire, that if he goes to jail, if he doesn't go to jail by raising and selling stock, he can pay the with the insurance, he can pay off the $400,000 fine. But if he goes to prison, he can't raise the livestock to pay off to sell to pay off the fine. And so they want him in prison so they can steal the land. Yeah, I mean, this whole thing is a...
Wow!
Put all the pieces together, it's a pretty nasty deal.
And I talked to the guy at length, Mr. Hammond, Dwight Hammond, last week, and he's 73 years old. He pretty much sounds himself like he's out of. He sounds beat down this whole entire thing, and he spent 90 days in prison himself so far, and his sons have both spent a year and a day. And then what they've done is come back, and I believe this was last year or even the year before that they did this time served, they've come back on them and said, because the federal government appealed immediately upon the sentencing and said, we want the maximum penalty. So what they did was let him go serve this time, and then now they're coming back and saying, well, we want the full 5 years. And so they're supposed to report, according to Mr. Hammond, January 4th, to turn themselves in to be locked up for 5 years, minus time served, which would be 90 days for himself.
They should not turn themselves in. They are being invited to turn themselves in. They do not show up. That's an invitation. They shouldn't go.
Patricia, that's what we're discussing. But let's see, I think we ought
to... Sorry, had to jump in there.
You have a presentation for us, I understand.
Oh, okay, I'll get that ready.
Now, in Ryan, in talking with them, he's kind of laid it on the table and waiting for an answer. You know, is he going to invite us or not? Is he willing to take the inherent risk of defying the government over arrest? This is kind of like that Phil Lyman situation. And Phil is not sure that he's willing to take the risk. And so on both of these, we're kind of waiting for them to make a decision. And when they do make that decision, I just sent you an invitation that I'd written for the Bundy Ranch. It was never used, but it was past the point of needing it. But we would have to have them sign something. Whether it go public or not would be depending on whether they changed their mind after we got involved to prove that we were invited. But, you know, it's got to be they can't be sold on the idea. They've got to have it presented on the table and then voluntarily say, yes, we want you to come. You know, I think we're risking a lot, especially in the first couple operations that we do. And if we have somebody turn against us and we can't prove that we were invited and that they really understood what was going to happen, it would be pretty destructive of OMD. Are you ready, Patricia?
Yeah, and are we going to do this? It's kind of a visual, more of a visual presentation. So, Ryan, what did you have in mind here this morning?
If you could give them just a brief outline of what crowdsourcing is, for those that don't know, and very brief on that, and then specifically the venue that you're familiar with and have been using, and then what you and I talked about the other day as far as which entity to advertise the funding for, and the possibility of, if it would be beneficial to have it separate. For instance, if it were individuals that were requesting the funding and providing on their honor or something, that it would be donated to that venue. What would be the best way to go about it? But I guess a basic outline would be the way to start.
Okay. Well, this is a visual thing to see, and eventually, if you like what you hear today, then we'll get back together and you can see what I call the crowdfunding calculator and how it works. But I'll give you some links, or Ryan can supply you with links to two short videos so you can learn more about it. But crowdfunding was a $15 billion industry last year, and it's purported to be, that was worldwide. And here's the interesting part about raising $15 billion is that 80% of projects, and I hear that number may be even higher, did not receive funding, did not. And so that means that only 20% or less of the crowdfunding projects actually received funding. And so We Share Crowdfunding took a look at this, and they've been through several changes and stuff in the structure, and it's improved and better, and I think it's a really viable option on funding, is a way that people can set up a crowdfunding page. What crowdfunding is when, like Obama, for instance, raised, we don't know how much he raised. I've heard to him from $6 million to $60 million, and I'm not sure what the actual number was, but he was able to raise a lot of campaign funds from small donors, from a little smaller people all donating together. And so what WeShare Crowdfunding did is they took the crowdfunding concept and they married it with a networking concept. And so it's a team concept on a way to raise funds. And what I see the challenge is for any people that are trying to fight this behemoth that we're facing is that we're underfunded. And we're underfunded, one, that the organization OMD needs funds, and also individuals all need funds. We know people that would love to be more involved with what we're doing, but they have to keep tent making. I mean, they need to keep doing what they do for their day job, or they're retired and don't have any extra income to put into things to support things. And so this is a way to get around all this. It's a way that people could actually raise an extra $5,000 a month individually if they wanted to, or a lot more than that, and have it be in the form of donations. Now, donations and gifts, people might split hairs on this, but I see this for individuals. I happen to work with Dave Merlin and Chris Chapman from WeVGov.com, and their understanding, they get IRS grand juries dissolved regularly. I mean, they're pretty impressive on what they know about the tax code. So it's a way to raise funds, and it starts with a $200 donation. And I'll tell you, the people that have done this the best are a team in Germany, and then it spread. A team in Korea picked up their method, and they have a 95% replication rate with this. And it's been very impressive because people are busy. So all we require is that people refer a minimum of 3 people that want to have their own crowdfunding projects raise funds for themselves. And then it's networked in such a team way that the organization OMD would receive funds and not have to be out begging for funds all the time. The funds would just automatically be rolling in. Are there some downsides to this? Yes, there are. The government and all their various branches have been rabid to cut off people's funding that they don't like. For instance, Daniel Smith from StandbyDaniel.com, he's someone that's been fighting the government on. They've been attacking him about MMS. You may be familiar with the story up in Spokane, a long involved story. But anyway, he received a considerable amount of crowdfunding. And then when he lost in court, actually his attorney's probably going to lose his bar card, and a couple others are going to lose their bar cards, and hopefully the judge will too, because the whole thing was so corrupt. But anyway, the government came in and told the crowdfunding site, which was GoFundMe, that this is to shut down that funding, that it was fraud or whatever. And I thought that was kind of interesting. So we set one up on WeShare. And again, in WeShare, shut it down. When I contacted them and I said, hey, what's going on here? Who gave the authorization for this? And they said, oh, we were told that this was fraud. So it's either the FDA coming in or the DOJ coming in and saying it's fraud. And, of course, the implied threat is you shut this page down or we shut the whole company down. And so that's why, and that's happened with other people's crowdfunding. And so that's why I'm saying that it has to be more stealth and more under the radar. For instance, there was another crowdfunding site, I believe it was on GoFundMe, that was set up for South Africa because of the white genocide going on in South Africa. And if you don't know about that, I can send you a video. But the ADL actually came in and complained and said, oh, no, that's a lie. That's not going on, and that's anti-Semitic or whatever they said, and forced them to shut down that crowdfunding site. So they can't do that. And so so if you want to be out front and say, hey, you know, Operation Mutual Defense needs funds and have that be the thing, fine. But if you want to, you really need to think about this. With my South African group, we're going to start running this under the radar. We're not going to say it's for South Africa. We're going to say it's for somebody's surgery.
There's a new one out. A buddy of mine set it up. He also set up a bunch of web pages. It's called Patriotic Warriors, but underneath Patriotic Warriors, he has Patriotic Causes, because they found out, you know, that, like you say, the government's shutting things down for patriotic causes. So mm-hmm. they've set one up where they have control, and they pretty much tell the government, sorry,
It's freedom of speech. It's free. It's, you can't shut us down for doing what we want to do.
Well,
so
that's great. And if you think, you know, I don't know how that one is set up. That if it's just for donations, that's fine. But the strong suit of We Share crowdfunding is that you get. It's really not about your projects. It's about helping everyone else because they need funds. And if you can show them a way that they can receive funds, receive donations, live their dream, have, you know, they still have some life they want to live, then that will help your organization as well. And it flows up and the money becomes very substantial. If you had 5 minutes right now, we could actually run over and use a Join Me setup and I could actually show you how the donations run if you wanted to see it that way. But I would actually recommend that you see the two little videos first so you get the concept, and then I'll show you how the actual funds run.
Well, I don't know that we need to see that unless we decide to go with it, but I've got some questions. One, if I contribute $1,000 to, say, an OMD fund, how much will OMD receive?
Oh, $1,000. They receive all their donations. All the people that they personally refer to the platform, 100% of those funds go to them. It doesn't start sharing. That's why asking me questions at this point is kind of pointless. I would really like you to watch the videos, two little videos, see the crowdfunding calculator, and then we'll have enough information to ask intelligent questions. But 100% of the funds go to OMD that are designated to them. That would people, they can either make what we call an external donation, like if you just want to donate $1,000 to OMD, terrific. If you don't want to be part of the platform, but if you want to be part of the donation distribution formula, what we call the platform, then still 100% of those funds go, whether you get three people, 300, it doesn't matter. 100% of that goes to OMD.
So GoFundMe does not, or CrowdFundMe or whatever it is, doesn't receive anything for it? It's free?
No, they actually receive what we call breakage down the road. So they don't receive anything. It's there's going to be a cost for either how you take the money out, either through a debit card or what they're setting up. PayPal is what I use now. It's $4 per transaction. And so there's a little transaction fee there, but the company doesn't receive that. And I can explain more of that later. They don't take a percentage like GoFundMe or Kickstarter or any of those. They take no percentage of the funds. The funds, 100% of it goes to OMD. It really is the new economy. When you see it, I think you'll be impressed with it.
Anybody else have any questions about it?
Not until do homework.
Okay, do your homework. You can go to YouTube and write this down, and you can save Ryan an email. And the email that you're looking for.
Why don't you give Ryan the links? We've got a mail distribution list, and he can get them out to all of us.
Okay.
Yep, I have all that stuff, so I'll send it to the distribution list.
Okay.
I think that all the questions for Patricia?
For right now?
All right. We appreciate it, Patricia, and I'll be in touch with you soon.
Okay, Ryan, thank you so much. God bless everybody.
Thank you much.
You too.
All right.
Well, do we want to discuss this now or continue with the agenda and then get to this?
The Hammond thing is intriguing me, especially, I mean, isn't there a statute of limitations? 11 years later, they're indicted?
Well, we're not going to do a legal battle. I've read most, not all, of enough to understand what's happened with this. In fact, the guy, Bill Good, wrote a very good synopsis of it. He left a few things out, but, you know, if... I don't want to spend the time going through everything and start writing it up to get things on our side, but I see a picture of the government stealing money. But as far as the legal battle is over. The issue at this point would be good press explaining to people what didn't happen, really happen very well with the Bundy Ranch until finally Ryan Bundy came out with his hour-long explanation after the unrustling. But the artillery is to start writing articles and explaining how these people are getting screwed, and the apparent objective of the government is to steal their land.
Right.
You know, looking into statute of limitations, I think their attorneys would have fought if there was one. But I can't see something going 11 years without prosecution. But that would be something that I would look into when I'm, if Hammond wants to go with this. But I don't want to waste a lot of time preparing it if he's just going to meekly go hold his hands out on January 4th.
Yeah, but well, surely if it gets looked into, then a statute of limitations is part of, will be part of that looking into. There was a couple other issues with it. First off, they, for instance, we were saying Mr. Hammond stated that they were bringing him up on some form of a terrorist charge. And even to the point where when the judge was handing out his sentence, the prosecution said, hey, that's how can you possibly give him that? And the judge said specifically, these men are not terrorists, and you damn well know it. And so he gave him the sentence that they got. Right afterwards, BLM appeals, and they get, apparently at this point they have the full 5-year minimum mandatory sentence for whatever penalty it is they're being charged with, which is what it sounds like, right? They're being charged with a penalty as opposed to a crime.
No, they fined and agreed to pay the $400,000. Now they're just trying to get the jail time. And the $400,000, at least from what I've read so far, what Bill put together was it's just the government, in their vindictiveness or in their desire to make it impossible for the Hammonds to raise the stock to pay the $400,000, which they've agreed to pay, if they get them in prison, they won't be able to do it. And at that point, then, the government gets to steal the land. They also had first, if the land's put up for sale, the government has first right to purchase. That was part of the...
Wow! Yeah.
I mean, so they won't get him. It was whatever they could do to get him in jail for the full term that would disallow them to come up with $400,000.
Yeah. But they weren't charged with terrorism, but that F-1 was part of the Terrorism and Death Penalty Act of 1994 or 96, something like that.
$400,000 for burning 120 acres of grass accidentally is just asinine. I mean, you could put a full fire department out there.
Yeah, the problem is the grandson, Dwight's grandson, was threatened with prosecution if he didn't testify, and he said that the fire was set intentionally, and it may have been. Because one of the things I read, they were talking about there were a lot of weeds growing where the grass for grazing wasn't growing up, and by taking the weeds out, it gives the grass, the grazing grass, an opportunity to grow back in. So, you know, I haven't looked into all the details, the testimony and all that. So there's two sides of the story, whether it was accidental or intentional. If it was intentional, it just went further than it was supposed to. Whether they knew they were on the... allotment land or not. Now, my understanding is this was done on an allotment that they had grazing rights to, and
right.
You know, it could be construed as pasture improvement to burn weeds and brush out to increase the grazing.
Yeah, and that's supposedly what BLM was put there for, was to keep the land healthy.
Right. Management, yeah.
Right. So,
yeah.
I mean, the whole thing stinks, but, you know, there's a lot of
detail.
There's, you know, the conflicting statements that were made during the course of newspaper articles and things like that. So it's going into the testimony of the trial and getting all that. And it's going to be, you know, 10 or 15 hours of research, I think, to put together an accurate story, leaving, if there's a dispute, leaving both sides of the dispute in. Because they're inconsequential to the whole thing. Because, it, you know, from the get-go, beginning in 2012 when they charged these people, 11 years after the crime, it seems the focus was upon, and that's about the time they went after, started this recent thing on the Bundys, wasn't it, 2011?
I thought that there was a 10-year statute of limitations on federal stuff like that.
The government probably has a rule that says they're not subject to statute of limitations, only we are.
Yeah.
They can lie to us, but we can't lie to them. Or if we do, we face up to 25 years in prison. Ask Martha.
Yeah, it's like that. The IRS, they, you know, there was 1 year that I didn't pay my taxes, and 10 years later they go, hey, guess what? You didn't pay your taxes back in this, and we need all your records. It's like, that was 10 years ago. I don't know what the frick am I supposed to know? So a $4,000 tax bill turned into, with penalties and interest, is now at $40,000. And I've even attempted, I said, look, I'll give you $10,000 cash right now. Well, where are you getting the money? And I told them, that doesn't concern you. And they go, oh, yes, it does. I go, no, it doesn't. I says, I can borrow the money from mafia loan sharks and get better rates than you guys. But so they turned me down. They said they would knock off $2,500. And I went, really? No, nah, that's all right. See ya. So
it is a large debt. It's got to pay off.
Yeah, my calculator's still clicking with them. But
anyway,
you know,
back to this though. Like I say, until the Hamas decide that they want to resist arrest, which is what it's going to amount to. I don't think that we need to spend a lot of time on it. But when I look at the story, man, there's a story here.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And in talking with them, I mean, it's hard, you know. I'm trying not to sell the thing, basically, but you've got a guy who's so downbeaten. His statement was, I appreciate what it is that you guys are trying to do and say, but at this point, we're supposed to report into jail on January 4th, and I don't possibly see what can be done between now and then to stop that. So they're so downbeaten that he couldn't understand that what I was saying was, if you say you don't want to go to jail because it's a complete overstep and they're blowing this thing way out of proportion, they're trying to put a 73-year-old man in prison for having a controlled burn that got a little bit out of control, 120 acres being nothing basically in the grand scheme, that there are lots of people who will support you in that decision. And so, you know, they're so downbeaten they can't even hear through that and really see what it was that we're saying. You don't have to submit to these things, and there's people who will support you.
I think it needs to be explained to him that, you know, the only thing that I can see, if he went underground, it wouldn't do any good because they'd lose the ranch anyway. The only thing that I could see that would have any hope would be for them to stay on the ranch and we occupy the ranch and don't allow the arrest of them and let them continue to raise their livestock.
Right.
You know, it might be a long operation that way unless the government got reasonable and was willing to settle, but it would be a settlement based upon the resistance that OMD applied to keep them from being arrested and allow them to continue the ranching operation.
Even with that, Mr. Hammond specifically stated that if he did not show up to that, to his date that he's supposed to turn in for it to serve his sentence out, if he didn't show up that day, that he is sure that they would come to kill him. he specifically stated that to me.
Well, that's basically it, and that's I can't think of anything else, any role that we could play as OMD besides occupying the ranch, kind of like the Bundys, but instead of getting the cattle unrustled, not let them rustle the Hammonds.
Yep.
But
anything,
you know,
yeah, because they
Sonner's brothers,
government bent their knees and decided to be more reasonable with the whole thing.
Say it again, Dennis.
No, I was going to say, anything from either his brother or the son, are they in the same position? Because it sounds like they're protecting the grandson.
Well, the grandson did a plea bargain to testify. He was 13 at the time of the fire.
Right, but the thing is, if he doesn't turn himself in, then the grandson is probably, in his mind anyway, in play.
The grandson would have no consequences of this. He fulfilled his agreement to the government. He testified, and that was what the plea bargain was. If
okay.
He testified.
Okay, Ryan, do you have any sense from the others whether or not they're going to go along or not? Because you keep talking about the senior gentleman.
The sons, yeah. The only person I have contact, I haven't talked to the other ones yet.
Okay.
And
Dwight Hammond's lap, we'd have to talk to Steve. Steve's 43. We'd have to talk to Steve before we finally did it, but if the father doesn't agree, he's the one that owns the ranch.
Yeah. Well, I get what you're saying, Dennis. I mean, if there's an inroad to have an influence with that's not just directly from ourselves, is that what you're getting at?
Well, that's one of them, and also... what is the rest of the family doing? I mean, are they just going to take and let the gentleman walk to jail, or are there going to be some elements to try to
Burn
his own?
Mrs. Hammond has moved up to Burn, a town north of the ranch, and is staying there. If we did this, anybody that wasn't willing to stand against the government would probably just leave the ranch, and they're not charged, so there's no consequence to them. But as far as getting Steve to try and get his father, there we're trying to exert pressure, and that leaves reason for them to back away later on.
Well,
Gentlemen, I'm not trying to exert any pressure. I'm just asking if Ryan to talk to anyone else to get a sense of where the family's at.
Yeah,
That's
just
my
the one
question.
Gentleman's opinion.
So I think if the
older gentleman is willing to lay down, are the two sons as willing to lay down, or are they basically buckling to the influence of their father on it? We really do need another side to the story that's internal.
And again, it's not to leverage anybody or do anything. I was just trying to, determine what the situation was and who we talked to and just where they stood.
Yeah. So, no, I'll put that get that going this week, trying to get some contact with the sons. I definitely don't have any contacts that anybody's fed me yet for them.
Well, I kind of hate the idea with my children of them going to mommy if daddy said no. And, Dwight owns the farm, and I think that he's got to talk to Steve. And if Steve wants to talk to us, I mean, I would ask Dwight. Rather than go around Dwight, I would ask Dwight, would it do any good for us to talk with Steve? Steve's the 43-year-old, the other one that was charged.
Yeah. Well, at this point, we can just leave it. We need more. It's probably worthwhile to try to gather a little bit more information. If that's what, Dennis, you'd like to know a little bit more. So put a little bit more effort into getting more information, and then we can decide next time whether we want to put any more effort into it.
Yeah. And again, it was more just...
I can pass the documents I've got on to you, Dennis, if you want to look at it.
Yeah, that would be good. But again, it was just more to try to figure out who's contacted who, because, quite frankly, I don't talk to you a whole lot, Ryan, and I guess you and Gary may talk a bit and such. But it was more just, again, to figure out what was kind of going on.
Yep, I've spoke with this was actually referred to me by LaVoy Finicum. It was referred to me by the Bundys a couple of months back, and LaVoy Finicum mentioned that it was going on. He made a video actually just this last week about it, and which caused me to remember that I had the guy's number and stuff. So I talked to LaVoy. He felt that it was pretty important that we talked to him, but he said that he wasn't really sure that Mr. Hammond would even be receptive to such a thing, which, he was receptive to hearing it. Whether or not he was receptive to the idea at all, we'll find out. So
I was given a number for a Bill Good who had the information about the entire thing. The Bill Good got in contact with Mr. Hammond's wife at the same time that I got in contact with Mr. Hammond. So the wife said that she's too emotionally distressed and doesn't want to talk with anybody about it outside of the family. Now, I spoke with Mr. Hammond, and he was totally willing to hear us, to hear me and hear what we had to say, and then just to give me some of his own thoughts as well. So that's where we're at on it. I would think at this point I would either have to, you know, get some other contacts that was aware of those sons' contact information to get any more, any further from it, with it, rather. And or go to Mr. Hammond himself, which I don't know that he would have a problem with. What's the age on the two sons, Gary?
Dwight Hammond's 70 years old now. Steve Hammond's 43, and Dusty, the one that turned state's evidence, is 24. He was 13 at the time of the fire.
Oh, my God. Okay, so...
That's as the date that Bill... I just sent you the... This is the thing that Bill Good wrote up. It's got maps and things, and you can see it. It's gone to the AAB list. I've got other documents.
Yeah.
But this one is a pretty good synopsis of what's happened, and you can get the picture of what's... you know, they were convicted under the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996. That's the reference to terrorism, but the fire, the specific one out of that act would be that F-11, 18 U.S. Code 844 F-11, which... tell you what, I'll send you that too. I haven't broken the whole thing out. So that's the law. It's highlighted that they're being charged under.
Thank you.
Well, they got about Brian, 2 months left to figure it out.
You got what?
We got about 2 months left to figure it out if they're going to jail or not, or if we end up doing anything, or so. Time is the enemy.
Yeah, but
yeah, and as it stands,
a willing partner to do this.
Yeah, and I would say at this point they're pretty much on the no side, other than he told me that he would speak with his wife and then get back to me on it. So.
And that increases the likelihood that they'll go with us when the wife gets involved.
That's our, I don't know, that unless he's got a Carol Bundy, but it doesn't sound like he does.
Yeah, it sounds like she's already moved off the ranch, so I don't know. It should be interesting. Hopefully he'll contact you and you can get some more information.
Yep. Okay, so are there any more questions on that stuff? On the Hammond brothers? Okay, so we've got the Tucson, Arizona veterans. If you wouldn't mind giving a brief rundown of that, Gary, something you've been contacted about.
Somebody that was at the Bundy Ranch and created a little bit of controversy. He went by Louis the Prepper. He goes patriotically by Louis Arthur. His real name is Michael Louis Arthur something. During the Bundy Ranch, he was trying to get back some equipment, and Buddha was in charge at the time. It was after the event, and I told Lewis that I would get him access to see if his property was up there, and some conditions had to be met. He was going to be escorted and all this. And Buddha agreed to it, but in the meantime, Lewis didn't think that I would get it done, and so he left. But because of that, and he saw that he could trust me, and apparently he was a problem with a lot of the Patriots there. He doesn't believe in use of firearms, basically. Well, I think he's changing. Since then, he's the guy that climbs flagpoles and radio towers to get attention to veterans down in Phoenix and Tucson, Arizona. And currently in Tucson, he's running an operation. They've got a landowner where they've got 3/4 acre where they can set up a homeless camp for homeless veterans. And they're setting it up. Now, what he's looking for is kind of a rotating group of people to come for at least 2 weeks at a time, 20 positions, to help make sure these guys are protected and perhaps stand against the city if they try and enforce code. Now, he's told me the code enforcement officer said that he's not going to see a violation, but if he gets pressure from the city council, he might. And they've been run off of some other places, even though they had permission of the owner. Threats from the city caused the owner to withdraw the consent. The current property owner says he's not going to withdraw the consent for them to go on the property. So it's kind of a zoning issue, and zoning laws kind of suck, but apparently there's a provision there that would allow them, it's commercial zoning, C3 zoning. It would allow them to have humanitarian activities if they go to the Board of Adjustments and seek a variance. The problem with that is if they go to seek the variance and they're denied, now they've agreed not to do it. You know, they've acquiesced to the decision of government rather than holding firm their right to use the property the way they want to use it. Still not inconsistent with zoning laws, but not totally consistent. So he's looking for people to come down there and help out. Food will be provided there, but, you know, your sleeping gear and all that, unless they get some facilities set up, would be the responsibility of the people that go there. And you know, I don't know how long it would last, and it'd be ideal for people in Phoenix, but I don't think people would travel a great distance to do it. Now, if we go to the next item on the agenda, degrees of involvement, it would be the first level. Basically, it's an occupying force without any anticipation of problems, though it could escalate. Anything can escalate. You know, we don't know.
Here, can I give you an update?
Yeah.
I was up there pretty much all day with him yesterday. His encampment is about 80-85 miles northwest of me. So when I go up into Tucson for supplies, I go by and see what else he needs and everything else. He's just got yesterday they put up 2 GP mediums, so they have tents for staff to go there, and last week we bought 3 10-20 temporary carports, and then we bought the tarps to go around them, so, and they have an outhouse there, and the city is backing off because they're seeing that they're doing good, and actually the city is going to drop off on tomorrow a roll-off dumpster for them to put the trash in. They've been going around and cleaning up the park that is across the street where the homeless are, and the fire department's come by and given them biohazard containers because they've picked up over 300 syringes in the park. And they need people for like night watch for security because that's, and usually at the first of the month when the vets receive their checks and stuff, because that's when the little gangbangers come in and roll them for their checks, or once they cash their checks. And there's also, it's a 4-mile-long underground box culvert that takes all the storm water for flash floods and stuff in Tucson. There's 2 sets of them. One's 4 miles, and I think the other one's about 6 miles. And what he does before the rains come, he takes a team, and they put guys at the far end, and then they sweep through and push everybody out of there so they don't get killed in the flash floods. And so then they can round them up and then take them back to the camp and feed them and get them some new clothes. And the camp is getting a one of those portable shower units brought out next week. He's doing amazing things. The guy, his biggest thing is, you know, just like me down here. You know, everybody loves to bang away on a keyboard and going, awesome, 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 but getting people off the couch to actually help and do anything is another story. So that's his problem, is getting people to man the place. He set that up approximately, the one in Tucson, after he set up the one in Phoenix. He stuck around the one in Phoenix for about a month until he had people who were ready to take it over. Then he bumped over to Tucson, and what he plans to do after that is go down into Nogales and get them off the streets there too. The one in Tucson, when they were booted off, huh?
He lives in Tucson, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. And so the first property they were in Tucson, they had permission, but the guy's an immigrant that has a hot dog stand on it, and that's when they said, hey, we're going to shut you down unless you get rid of him. So he didn't know the law. He didn't know what the hell. He just knew shut you down. So he told him, look, you guys got to leave. So they found this new property owner, and the property owner went to the media and told him, city can kiss my ass. This is my property. I will do what I want. And they've come out, but it seems the city council and everybody else has backed off, and because the problem's there, they just didn't want the media attention that it's as bad as, you know, it is. So the city council pretty much says, all right, if you keep the place clean, if you keep doing what you're doing, then everything's fine. He's actually placed, I would say, the one in Tucson, he's already placed 10 veterans and homeless people in rehabs and in housing, permanent housing, got them off the streets. So he's doing incredible things.
I think he found jobs for one or two people as well.
Yeah, and he's taking a vow now that he's living at the camp for the next 22 days, 24/7, because he can't get enough people to come in and help him out. And when I was up there yesterday and we were talking, man, the dude is beat up. He's just physically exhausted. And so,
he got a little
in the daytime, if
he got a little bad press in Tucson a few months ago when he went up a 600-foot tower and spread flyers out, and they did everything they could to keep any publicity from getting out about him at the time. But he has done more for veterans than anybody I know.
Yep, yep, and that's why, you know, I believe in what he's doing, and even though I'm doing this down here and trying to do this with you guys, I still believe in him, so I go up there and try to help as much as I can. It's an awesome thing he's doing, I mean, to me, yeah.
If we go into degree of involvement and look at level one, that was added because of this. I don't think it's an OMD event. It's not a defense event in the normal concept, but OMD could sanction it, which would mean we would encourage people to participate by going there and helping out, but we're not really doing a call-out. It's the level
right.
One degree of involvement.
And well, yeah, because you do have...
That would help him, and that would give a good name to OMD.
Yeah, and it's also, you know,
important.
He does... They do need security. So even the guys who want to, you know, be all tact cool and shit, I mean, all we're running up there when we do the tunnel sweeps is sidearms, but it's illegal to go into those tunnels. TPD will arrest anybody going into those tunnels, except for TPD came by and had a meeting with him and says, you know what you're doing is fine. Feel free to go about doing it anytime, and we have no problem with you doing it. So TPD, Tucson PD, has given their blessing for what he's doing. Fire department's coming by and dropping off biohazard containers. Certain city agencies are behind them.
Pickup truckloads of supplies are being, water and food are being brought in by people contributing to the cause and everything. And he's got their attention down there. And he's setting
up
a program that is doing more than VA to help the veterans.
And see, and that's where I was sitting and talking to him yesterday and saying, what you're doing and what I would like to try to do with getting the ranch and getting veterans and, you know, bringing them down, it would go hand in hand if I can find the backing for these ranches. Another ranch just came up for sale down here. So I could seal off 10 miles of the border permanently with $5 million. And there's tons of homeless vets. You can clean them up, bring them down, get them out there. So he was going, yeah, we just got to figure out how to go about doing that, how to raise the capital to get a ranch, you know, and use the bases in the city just to pull them in for a day or two and then just haul them down there and then get them into, you know, some type of rehab where they're away from all the drugs and the alcohol and the shit like that and start cleaning them up.
Yeah, what you're talking about, Tim, is exactly some of the conversation that came about during, the aftermath of the unrustling at the Bundy Ranch. And we're talking about Operation Vet Aid, OVA, and moving one of the pieces of property that was used for militia encampments, using it to house veterans. And then there was some folks coming up with, you know, kind of reintegration, societal reintegration tools and classes and even some industry and such. And then, like you're talking about, getting them involved on the border would be fantastic. But it's funny how there was a lot of conversations going on at the time, and Louis has basically taken off on it and has put together a good piece of it. He's put together a good show of work. That's true. His work ethic can't be questioned.
No. I mean, and, you know, that's what I told him. I says, dude, don't back down. I says, you're doing a good thing. It's just, it's tough to find help. I mean, look at me. I've been down there 5 years, but I'm not going to back down. I'm not giving up, and it needs to be done. And so don't do it. Sooner or later, something will happen. And I was letting him know that, you know, if we can clean them up and everything else, I'm talking to an organization up in Phoenix. I got to go back up there next Tuesday. And they're trying to put together almost the same thing. And also a training facility where they'll retrain the veterans in, say, the solar industry. And these guys are going, wow. If you get that down there, then what we can do is, you know, instead of trying to rehabilitate them in the city where it's just organized chaos, and that's why we're losing 22 a day, you bring them to a rural area, and my place, I get Afghanistan vets that sit there and go, dude, it's like I'm back in country. And they are so much more calm when they're in an area that is familiar to them. And it's easier to work with them. And so these guys I've been talking to for a while. And hopefully everything can come together because we have the plan. It's just we don't have the funding. And if we can get the funding and the basic concept moving, that's when you can take that to the VA and go, look at what we're doing. And then the VA, because, you know, there's so much bad press with them, I guarantee you that they will start funding some of that shit.
Well, let's look at OMD's role in this specifically. And like I said, I added level one after talking to Lewis on Thursday or Friday. And I told him that we had a meeting and I was going to bring it up to the meeting. Do we want to sanction events where we start promoting? Like I could go to the web page and set a page up before this, encouraging and explaining, and I'll get with Lewis, get the details who the contact person is, and put that out. And then on Facebook, you can just drop the URL in, and it'll link the article where we encourage people to contact them and do it. We're not direct participants, but we're sanctioning the operation. And I think it would be good.
Oh, you got 100,
Lewis.
You got 100% okay for me.
Dennis?
Sounds good. Sounds good to me.
Brian?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, so I'll go ahead and prepare something, but rather than wait until next Sunday, I'll send it out on the mail, and if I don't hear any criticisms or recommendations within 24 hours, then I'll start broadcasting it. We'll make it a PDF, an email, and everything, and then we'll just start promoting it.
Yeah. He's got a Facebook.
What?
He's got a Facebook page. If nobody's seen it, it's VOP, Veterans on Patrol.
Yeah.
And he does videos and puts them up there of what he's doing and everything else. I think for OMD, I mean, that would be great PR to be involved in that.
Yeah, I wish we had our webpage up. We're going to have to do something about that real quick, but I will put it up at that domain with a that particular page linked. Now, Ryan, well, we've got to decide what we want on the page. I mean, I can put this up regardless of what the remainder looks like, but we've got to decide what we want to do with that web page.
Mm-hmm. One.
I think I sent you something from the original work where we kind of worked up a draft of what pages we should have. I don't know if we want to go into that now or have it under new business later on in the discussion.
Are you talking about the web page stuff?
Yeah. You have a guy that I can't remember, I don't recall his name right now, that was messing around with the web page, getting used to it, right?
Yeah, he's just basically waiting on content.
Okay, what
content and layout. Michael Varga.
So we've got to decide what we want on the page, and then I can work with Varga to start getting the pages set up. He's
right.
Going to be the webmaster.
Well, let's get to, let's see, we don't have that on here. But I know that I saw on the individual task list. Yeah, when we get to the individual task list, then we'll go into that, which probably should be next, as the response matrix itself is still in process. I can go over the details of what I have on there so far, if you'd like to, as far as what events we have on there.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and do that? Because I think that's a key part of our weekly call is just seeing what.
Next item is the response matrix. Have we got any progress with that matrix?
So repeat that again.
A review potential response matrix. Item 6 on the agenda.
Right. Yeah, that's what we're going into. Like I said, the product itself, I don't have anything that I'm ready to forward to you guys, but I can go over what's on there at the moment. So, number one, I have the Bundy Ranch, and I'm kind of going in order of how things have been received. And it's at this moment, it's kind of in a stagnant status. They're still all the same, just awareness of the situation, a heightened awareness because of the threats from the government end and the legal processes. So essentially all of the players on the other side that are involved have kept up their verbal threat process, but there hasn't been anything pursued legally recently. So, and there has not been any activity in the area. And the most recent activity was with some BLM contractors that were down in the Gulf Butte area, which is about 60 to 90 miles south and a little bit west of the ranch itself.
the Gold Butte area is part of the Bundy's grazing and foraging rights. So they are on Bundy land where the Bundys have rights at. It's not their personal land, though. Apparently, they say they heard somebody shooting at them, and so they vacated the area pretty quickly. And there were a few people that tried to make the association that it was probably Bundy supporters that shot at them. Well, given that the only people that have been in the area are the personal security detail, and they generally hang out pretty close to the ranch, although that if there's activity like that, they will go check it out. I talked personally to whoever it might be that they would be implicating in that, and they said, hell no, not only did they not see the people down there, but they wouldn't have shot at him anyway. So other than that, it's just kind of a awareness status and keeping in communication with them to see what they feel the climate is and such and how they're pursuing it. Number two is the Red Rock deal in Texas. And
Red River.
That's Red River, there you go. And that's because I learned of it right at the Bundy Ranch. So, and I do not have any contacts with that one. That one needs to be developed more, but I have it as number two on there. Number three is the situation in Oklahoma. And to my knowledge, that one is also a moot point. I had contacts for it a little while back. This is one, and I don't know if you're familiar with this one even, Gary. This is the deal where the state line had been redrawn, and so the land that the rancher owned on the Oklahoma side when the state line was redrawn.
Red River one.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that the same one?
Because okay. Because the river's meandering.
Yeah. Then okay, so they reallocated that property to the.
Yeah.
Let's say they're good.
It's accretion. It's slow movement of the river. A rapid river, the lines stay the same. Slow movement, the lines move with the threat of the river. Now, the boundary between Oklahoma and Texas at that point is the threat of the Red River. Now, there was a case between Colorado and New Mexico back in the early 1900s that I was. I'm going to stay involved in. I did some surveys on that boundary, and in doing so, I had to review the Supreme Court decision, and they said that once the boundary is established, it cannot be moved. But if the legal principles are that if the river moves by accretion, the boundary moves with it, then the boundary is not moving. It's staying where it is at the threat of the river, which means if the river shifts to the north over a slow natural process, that the boundary of Texas actually moves with the threat of the river. That's the whole idea behind the 1913 Supreme Court decision. So the federal government is trying to claim that it's their land because I don't know if they own the land on the north side of the river or not, but whether they did or not, it would not be under the principles that have been established for hundreds of years in as far as land boundaries. Now, the attorneys, I don't know how they fought the case but or what the status of the case is, but as a surveyor, you know, I would come to the determination that the boundary of Texas moved. And I think there was a case that I've got to go back and find that had to do with the Ohio River at one time where the same thing applied and the boundary stayed with the threat of the river. I remember reading it when I was living in Colorado, but I don't recall the case. But so there's precedents, Supreme Court precedents, on the fact that the rancher owns what came into his side of the river. And the government has no right to say that the state line is where it is. Now, I think they're still in court on that. I'm not sure. And there's nothing that we could do until the court was done because we don't want to use OMD to be a threatening force to intimidate a court. I don't think that's the proper role for us. But if the court finds against him, then we write up, cite the Supreme Court decisions and start pounding the artillery, the public relations, with the historical application of law in this country with regard to this type of situation. But as far as we do have to make contact, and I'll contact Mike Fry and see if he can get us a contact there, so we can find the current status, because it's not hitting the news that much anymore. People regurgitate the old articles from, you know, months ago, and it seems fresh again, but when I read the articles, it's the same thing, or if I look at the date, you know, it's back in June or something. So that's one that we need to, it wouldn't hurt us to get in contact with, because, you know, we've got the Supreme Court behind our defense of his property.
So what's the name of the other gentleman then that's in Texas with the, I was under the understanding that was the same one.
Well, the Red River one is the same one, where the dispute is between where the boundary of the Oklahoma and Texas is.
I think they're two different ones that we're talking about. So there's another one where a guy is, basically the federal government has said your land is not your land anymore.
That's it. They said the 1941 deed is no good. Is that the one?
Okay. So, yeah, it's the same one then. I just had them separated, and they're the same.
Yeah, they're the same one.
Okay.
Yeah, one guy's on one side of the river, and the other guy's on the other side of the river.
Well, I don't hear any contest on the other side. The federal government's trying to grab what isn't theirs, is what it amounts to. A government land grab,
yeah.
Bundy Ranch, the one we were just talking about, Hammond. Oh, the government wouldn't try and steal land from people, would they? They're supposed to protect life, liberty, and property.
Yeah, their own. So let me see here.
But I think you were talking about the same thing. It's just being represented differently when the government is saying that your deed is no good. But it's the same. It's the government trying to get sympathy, I think, more than anything.
Yeah, and I had spoke with the gentleman while I was at the Bundy Ranch last year. Man, and so I had contact information on it. I don't anymore, but I left it on my list of things to constantly look at, so I'm incorporating it into the possible response matrix. What's that?
Wouldn't Cliven have it?
He may. Yep. So I can get more on that. Okay, number three. I'm going to move that up to number three. I have this Phil Lyman. And Phil Lyman is the gentleman. He is the county commissioner in San Juan County, Utah. That's in the southeast corner of Utah, south of Moab and that. And they have Recapture Canyon in his county. And Recapture Canyon is a spot outside of town, outside of Blanding, Utah, that has some historical artifacts and archaeological sites. And the BLM has said, well, anyway, it closed down that area with basically administrative closures years ago to protect those archaeological sites. And there is an environmental group that has kind of hooked up with an archaeological protection group and made another organization, which is what has been prodding the BLM. That's just another instance where we can see the private interests prodding at the using the government to manipulate the people towards their will. In this case, the county commissioner said it's a county road. It's been designated as a county road. It was even designated as a county road by the BLM. Therefore, they have no jurisdiction in making the road closure. And he himself went down with a lot of townspeople. Myself and some other militia were there as well, and helped enforce the reopening of the road.
after that ride took place and the road was essentially open, the BLM brought Phil and another gentleman into federal court, and Gary, you'll have to refresh me on what the exact charges were, but basically they were with him and this other gentleman in regards to them violating a Utah closed road and organizing a protest to incite people to, not to violence per se, but anyway, going into the specific charges would tell you what they were brought up on. Regardless,
I don't recall myself. It was trespass, I think, was one of them, and moving the barricades. I don't recall, though, but yes, they were charged and convicted.
Charged and convicted, and now that they've been convicted, they've been awaiting sentencing. I haven't talked with Phil in 2 weeks, so that it's time I give him another ring. What happened was they kept changing judges on him. This is their third judge, as far as I know, and every single judge they've put in has had to recuse themselves after being exposed as having links in some way or another to the side bringing the complaint. So one of them, the first judge, had to recuse himself for being affiliated with the organization that is seeking the maximum penalty for Phil Lyman and the other gentleman. And the other judge had ties to the BLM, pretty strong ties to the BLM. So now they're on their third judge. They think that it's going to, Phil's impression was that this judge would actually have a fair sight in the whole endeavor. As I've talked to Phil, you know, just keep reminding him, you're dealing in a court that has a lack of jurisdiction here. So if you're dealing with a judge that you think is going to be more fair, then just by him even acknowledging the case means that he's unfair because they don't have jurisdiction here. But Phil and his legal team have introduced the notion that even the BLM cited it as a county road. So he's not he hasn't given up the court battle. But along the same lines, basically what I told him was, you know, that you're dealing in a court with a lack of jurisdiction, you're being sentenced by a court with a lack of jurisdiction, and you're going to report for something like $150,000 fines, and that included the legal fees of the other side, which are going to rack up because he says he's going through an appeal process and such. And also a year, just under a year and a day in prison, which was the maximum penalty that the organization wanted. So if he succumbs to all of those things, then essentially the foundation of the argument, which is the reason that he first reopened the road, which was that the federal government had no jurisdiction. Being a county commissioner then, they had the authority with the council's approval to reopen the road, which they did. And that by submitting, he would be recognizing the federal government's jurisdiction in this. And thus the foundation of his initial argument would crumble. And so I told him the same thing that I told Hammond. You know, if you decide that you're not going to be arrested, then there can be a support effort built up around that, and there's plenty of people who will stand by you. This would be pretty great profile as well, given that this is a county commissioner, and to get a county governing official that's standing up to the Leviathan in defiance would be pretty huge. I think it would be a pretty huge ordeal for the entire movement. It would probably spark a lot of people to start exerting themselves in a defiant direction.
Now he sent me a lot of information, but it was piecemeal. At first he was dealing with the current court decision, and what I wanted was the history of the land, the history of the road, which he finally started providing some of, but I've kind of set it aside for the same reason of Hammond's, because there's so much to go through. I'm going to spend 20 or 30 hours piecing it together, and I don't want to exert the effort if he's not going to make a decision. And my impression is he's too weak-kneed, and we probably will not get involved with it at this point. You know, if he changes his mind, I don't know about your last conversation with him, Ryan, but he was, you know, when I talked to him, he was... Now, I do think the state has introduced or passed a bill that would protect the state and county roads, but it's after the fact. And I don't know if it was just introduced or passed. But what's your feeling
on
whether Phil's going to go with us or not?
There's no telling. He's basically on the fence about it, one way or the other. He says his plan at this point, and this was as of having last talked to him, was that he would turn himself in to serve the time. But I know that the Bundy boys, Ammon and Ryan, have been hitting him pretty hard with conversation. LaVoy Finnicum's been hitting him pretty hard with conversation. It seems like every time I've talked to him, he's just gotten off the phone with one of those guys. And everybody's kind of prodding him in the same direction, that you really need to make the stand here on what's right and not just protect yourself. And so we'll see what he does. I would say my take on it is that he is on the fence. I don't have any definitive answer one way or the other for him.
Well, if he succumbs to the pressure, he's still in a position to back out, because he came under pressure. I mean, this is back to that South Bend one. You know, he's got to make it freely, and if he's got all these people pestering, he might just get weak and give in, but he might back off. I'm kind of uncomfortable with it in that regard.
Yep.
But, I think the state is beginning to come behind him. Whether they're going to have any effect, that's, the states aren't very likely to risk losing their funds to defend one of the people.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, this one.
Did somebody have a question about that?
Nope,
I'm good.
Okay, so we're good on that one.
That's on hold, just like Hammond.
Just like Hammond, yep. We have next LaVoy Finnicum, which is... He basically has said that he wants the OMD involvement. It's going to be, that's what our personal meeting was supposed to take care of this week, this last week, was to determine where he's at with things. It sounded like he had enlisted the help of Buddha for now, as far as security goes, and just having some sort of presence there. Buddha's been going out there every now and then with a couple of guys. And he's kind of at a standstill. The last notice was, or I guess the last update there would be, is that the county officials in his county, and that have to do with the grazing lands and dealing with the federal government, have kind of implored him to toe the line with the government, start paying his grazing fees again, come back to the negotiation table. And LaVoy is pretty much saying, I don't have any negotiations to have with these guys. They don't have any jurisdiction. So very much the Clive and Bundy line. And it sounds like his county government would like him to go along with it. Along those lines, his sheriff has said he won't allow any intervention by the BLM. So there's no real perceived threat at the moment, especially physically. Although he is having some problems out at his ranch with his water tanks being sabotaged and such. It seems to have dropped off here over the last month, though, those kind of problems as well, given his new security operation. So I guess we'll just see where it goes. When I get down there, I'll be talking with Mr. Finnicum about what he desires as far as involvement, what he thinks is necessary, and then coming up with a preliminary. Based on that. So there's LaVoy Finnicum. Stanton Gleaves.
Question for you on that one, if I could.
Yes.
Ryan, I don't know if you take a look at it every now and again, but our friends, the Oath Keepers, took and put up quite the little thing with Lavoie. He did an interview, I guess, with him called Fanning the Flames of Freedom After the Bundy Ranch. And it's up on a good old web page for them boys. But probably the interesting thing is that buried down in the comments is a fellow calling himself Raven, who supposedly was Cliven Bundy's personal bodyguard after the guys left the ranch that following Sunday. He kind of calls you out. He calls Buddha and Cooper as felons. And basically is telling Finnegan, I guess, not to let us get involved. I don't know if you saw that or you know who this guy Raven is or if you have any comments, but figured I'd at least make you aware of it because that was just posted on the 8th of October.
Raven, a guy saying that he was Cliven Bundy's personal bodyguard a week after the unrest.
Yep,
K-S-
I can, let me.
H? Ryan, yep. K.S. or A.H.?
That, possibly, I guess.
Because but I he's coming out hard. Else. Apparently he's been hit by the FBI three times in the last 10 months, calling the whole thing a debacle. Apparently he didn't vet anybody, you know, the whole thing. I can send the link to you guys, but it's on the webpage for the Oath Keepers under Fanning the Flames. I mean, it's easy to find.
I've read the article. I need to go back.
Sending it, Dennis.
What?
If you have the direct link, I'd appreciate you sending it.
Yep, I'm looking at it right now. And again, it came up, believe it or not, this weekend in a conversation that some people were having about Oath Keepers, Finnegan, and everything else at one of those meetings, and it was just, it's
well,
getting around. So I think we may need to somehow address it at some point.
Was anybody else bodyguard for besides Buddha from early on?
Nobody that, I mean, Buddha was in charge of it. Raven, gosh, I can't remember anybody with the call sign of Raven. But there was, you know, the personal security detail was rotating at that point because of people coming in and out. I mean, there was periods where the entire security detail had to leave, Buddha included, for a couple of days. And I brought in people from the militia encampments specially selected to perform that duty. And then they would go back right out to the militia encampments as soon as Buddha and a coherent security team was put back into place. So, and that was going on for a month, almost a month and a half after the unrustling. And so, I mean, it doesn't sound like there's any weight to any of those statements, but.
Yep. You guys should have the link now. And like I said, it's about halfway down the page in the comments. You'll see Raven there. It's not that hard to find. But again, okay, the lead guy was a poser ranger named Ryan Payne. He brought in felons named Buddha and Cooper. He was a militant and an instigator, and it kind of goes on from there. But the point being is that I don't know if this is a PR thing, we ignore it or fight it or however we do it. Once you guys get a look at it, you might have some commentary.
Okay.
But at least want to let you know it existed.
So, yeah, I'll have to look at it in more detail, and you're saying if those guys are going, trying to poison the well, if you will, before we get there, then that would explain some things, but it wouldn't explain Buddha inserting himself over there at the Finnegan deal. If it were somebody else.
There could be a lot of things going on.
Yeah, there could be.
Ryan, I think you ought to grab this and send it to Cliven and see if Cliven can identify who that was, because he says Cliven's personal bodyguard after guys left the following Sunday. And then he's got Ryan Payne as the poser ranger. And
yeah.
I don't know that you brought anybody in. You put a call out. He sounds like you've got more control over Buddha and Cooper than I understood.
Well,
he specifically states that he's talking to Lavoie about you not coming in already, so.
Wow, okay, and it's Raven. Yeah, I mean, when Buddha got there, it's a hey, we need guys specifically for this. He said what he was there to do, and so he was put in charge of the personal security detail. Surely Blaine Cooper came as part of Buddha's entourage. So yeah, I didn't have anything to do with necessarily. I guess, you know,
Ivan or somebody at the ranch though would know who took over when Buddha left the following Sunday.
When did Joseph Shaughnessy do personal security for Cliven?
Only on the day of the unwrestling.
Okay.
And very briefly, quite honestly. Shaughnessy was kind of gone. He was out in the militia encampments beforehand. He got brought in very briefly for personal security, and then once the Praetorians showed up, he was involved with their actions.
Well, Buddha left for 2 or 3 days, right? And that would be when this guy stepped in. That's the one we've got to pinpoint and see if we can identify who Raven is.
Well, except that was, I took over at that point directly. So, yeah, I'll shoot that on to Mr. Bundy and see if he knows who it is. And I'll get it out to Buddha. The only person I'm thinking is Grizz, which is Jason. And he's the black guy that we had on personal security and has done a couple interviews in retaliation to the whole Cliven Bundy's a racist thing. But him and I have generally had a pretty good relationship since then as well, so it seems odd that he would make those kind of statements.
Well, it's possible
I don't know.
He made this up, but it'd be, you know, the starting point is trying to identify who Raven is.
Yeah.
Well, this guy could be a freaking Fed troll too, so
he could be an oath keeper trying to you know, Elias even trying to discredit. I mean, oath keepers have continually tried to discredit Ryan, but you know, they failed in their mission when they ran from the drones. They failed in their mission in Oregon. They failed in their mission in Montana. They really blew their mission in with Kim Davis. You know, they don't have a reputation.
Well, and Stuart Rose sat in my house down here for 8 hours talking about how they were coming, they were going to help, they were going to do all this, and then nothing. So,
I've had long-winded conversations with Stuart Rose as well, and then you know, it's only a couple weeks afterwards or whatever when he comes out. His guy comes out with a bunch of stuff specifically saying that we're agent provocateur and all this other crap. So,
well, I think the proof is in the pudding. You know, there was not a shot fired.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'll look into that a little bit more. But as far as the Lavoie-Finicum thing goes, I guess that's about where it is. And definitely Lavoie has not said anything about that. And he is very, very much welcoming. You know, on one hand, Lavoie is close enough to the Bundys that they're talking fairly frequently, I'm sure. And so he can get a lot of, I'm sure that he's getting input from this avenue or that about certain things. But then he has the direct affiliation with myself and Mr. Bundy, and I'm sure he's getting that too, so it's just up to him to decide which one's more accurate, I guess.
Oh, I'd like to find out who Raven is, and I think that, like you say, that's the starting point. I don't know at this point whether this is worth responding to. It was just posted a couple days ago, but I'm going to have to read all these, but I don't think that there's anything that...
Well, if you look at the comment, nobody's replied, you know, they just kept moving on past his comment.
Jason and Luke have responded.
Raven, really?
Yeah, Jason, the next one down. Jason Van, he says, Raven, please email directly about what is happening with you. I may be interested in getting that information out there. I'm out of the OP at the moment, but would like to talk to you further when I have more time. Thanks, Jason.
Yeah, because Jason's the author of the article, and he's, what is he, the media director and associate editor for Oathkeeper. So I'm sure he would like a little extra dirt maybe to throw around.
Yeah, he would. So what we've got to do is find out who this Raven is. I mean, I can contact Jason, but I'm sure my name's not well received by anybody at Oathkeepers.
No, surely not. And I think Jason is the guy. Oh, man. Is Jason a young guy? Do you know who he is, Gary?
I don't know.
Well, his picture's up there. He's got kind of a black cowboy hat, wearing a beard and mustache. Looks to be late 30s.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's not him then. Okay, because there's, I thought the guy's name was Jason. So there's somebody at the Bundy Ranch shortly after that Oathkeepers had specifically brought in.
It's Jason Van Tattenhove.
Van Tattenhove, yeah.
Maybe you should reach out to him and say, hey, did you find anything else out about that? We'd like to know what the hell's going on. That way we'd know if Raven actually had anything, or, like he said, email him directly, and he wants to find out what the info is, and see if he got any more info.
Well, I can think of, you know, contacting Jason if we can't find out who Raven is. I think the starting point is to know who we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not he was even there.
If I contact Jason and tell him I know who Raven is, then that light, you know, it makes Jason be more receptive to discuss with me. You know, there's always
True.
A starting
True.
Point. A desirable starting point, and in this case, is finding out who Raven. So, Ryan, if you could, you know, grab that and put it in an email, and you don't have to tell him where it came from or anything, but see if Cliven can identify who this Raven might be.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the other thing, Tim, is to directly contact those guys, Oathkeepers. I'm sure if you go into the archives of that website, where they have all their postings on, you'll find stuff where they've specifically put articles on by this Danny Hammond or whatever, saying that I'm a fake ranger and that I'm an agent provocateur, even trying to say that I'm an FBI agent or something like that. So the Oathkeepers lying at this point.
Well, I've been called all of that. Deserter, fucking FBI fucking stool pigeon, all kinds of shit, and it's like, whatever.
Yeah, so at this point, the Oathkeeper's line is that Ryan Payne is a federal agent, or is possibly a federal agent, but is definitely a crazy sociopath, and I don't know that they would want to deal with anybody in anything relating to me outwardly.
By the way, he's the only one that set up a successful operation, too, but oh, no, don't put that in the article.
Yeah, well, if you ask me, I mean, Stuart Rhodes came down here for 8 hours to pump us for all kinds of how we did everything and everything else. So, to me, he was fucking working for the feds to see if, because he falls under the name of Oathkeeper, that we would be more apt to go, oh, hell yeah, we just bury bodies everywhere. So, I mean, it goes both ways.
New York admitted that most of the Oathkeepers are law enforcement, and Stuart Rhodes, you know, all the money goes to Rhodes. He handles all the funds. And...
Yep.
There's no LLC or anything to take the money. He just, you know, doles it out when he's willing to.
Well, when you look at him, you'll see that he spends a good portion of it on restaurants.
Yeah. Truly.
Well, sorry I got everybody off track a little bit, but I think that was number five, Lavoy Finnegan. Who else we got, Ryan?
We got Stanton Gleaves. Who I need to make contact with still. I have a phone number for him, and his situation is essentially the same. I put it as a lower priority than Lavoy Finnegan only because he doesn't seem to have, not only does he not seem to have the physical actions coming against him, the sabotage maneuvers or anything like that, but the county seems to be on his side as well. And so his situation is kind of just on the back burner at the moment, but I need to get more information on that one. The next one is support for any refugee in processing actions. And so what I meant by that is we came up with a process for bringing in these refugees into the state of Montana and utilizing a militia action in order to intercept the, whatever mode of transportation they're using to bring in, and then conducting interviews using experienced interviewers that are culturally aware with a pre-prepared questionnaire. And then, so the only thing that's missing from it basically is a, oh man. This is a good one. If you guys can excuse me for half a second, I'll be right back.
Okay, I'll get a drink of water.
Smoke them if you got them.
Yep, speak quietly amongst yourselves.
My favorite is mill around mill.
And in about 30 minutes, I got to cut it because I got the local news station coming down to do a story.
Okay, that was
wow.
That was a little bit important, or anyway, because it involves some assets that apparently we do have at the moment. So it's getting forwarded to me right now, and then I'll forward it to the mailing list. But apparently there is a directive that's come down from the federal government requiring anybody with a drone to register it with the federal government.
Yeah. That came out a couple days ago.
Yeah. So I'll forward it to everybody anyway, but that's what they're calling
yeah,
me about.
Well,
okay, we were on. Go ahead, Tim.
They can come down and register anytime they want. They ain't getting mine or registered.
Just film his grandfathered.
Right.
The next post-tax law is you register something that wasn't registered when you acquired it.
Right. So the thing with the refugees is there's a pretty good plan. There's only a couple pieces missing from it, which essentially are the end result of what you would do with the guys that that you found to be suspect. And then making sure that there was a good handshake between the humanitarian agencies and the militia performing the action. And it's a pretty aggressive action, I guess, if you look at it from the perspective of the state or any local governments involved with it. And surely the federal government's not going to like it. And I found it difficult. I think we were thinking 25 to 30 guys could handle it in each respective state, but that was given Montana, which we were talking about receiving 200 people on buses and being able to control that situation and conduct the interviews. So it might be something good to discuss as the discussions are had at the state level as to whether or not we could or would do a call out to support the state endeavors, as it is a defensive mechanism that they're performing. So manpower for security and things like that.
Two elements that have to be addressed. One is, how are you going to stop them and contain them for a period of time? And then the second one is, what are you going to do? And that would include final dissemination of information. But the one that would vary would from state to state, especially, would be the first part. How do we detain them for a period of time? The second one would
right.
be standard. The second part of the operation.
Humanitarian aid. Give them food and water while they're answering questions.
Yeah, BLT sandwiches.
Okay, so that's what I have on there at the moment. Is there anything that anybody would like me to put on there to add or start researching?
No, it sounds like you got a full book.
Sounds like you're going to be a busy man.
Let's back up a little. I sent degrees of involvement as a draft, and confidential one at that, for, you know, if you'd review and comment, I'll get a final copy. If we need to add anything, if we need to have subdivisions within any of the elements or anything like that, but it kind of gives us a level to assign to various projects what they would entail initially. And like I say, the Tucson one would be level one.
And Ryan, I think that once we decide what those levels are, that would be a good thing to put on the matrix.
Yes. Surely.
Any other comment on that? Otherwise, we can jump to the individual task list, because I think Tim's only got about another 20 minutes he can be with us.
Yep.
Hey, somebody's trying to keep track of the time and get us moving here, there. So.
The level five, an event that appears to have no resolution absent violent confrontation.
Last point.
Yeah. Are you, I guess what my question would be is, though not under level four, you have an event that anticipates no resolution short of armed defense, though not to be provoked by...
Bundy Ranch was not to be, four. Began as three, went to four.
So you're saying level five is an event where we've agreed that it is such a egregious act or whatever that has to be answered to with a defensive action that is aggressive.
Yes, something that we all consider ultimately will occur in this country. And that's one that we would have to have our ducks completely in a row before we got involved in that. But it's there because it's a reality. You know, I'd like to think that the government will finally submit to the defiance, but, you know, I really don't believe it, you know. And so the plan actually, you know, goes into five. Not from an OMD standpoint, but, you know, parts one and two are an individual standpoint where you go into basically level five.
Right. So is there another name that might be?
Well, this is internal. It will remain confidential only for the board members. I mean, we might publish the first four. I don't think we want to publicly acknowledge number five.
Okay, so I guess that's where I'm, we probably just get rid of level five on there and talk about things level one through four, and if something like that came along, or rather when something like that comes along, I'm sure, we can give it a...
On the confidential list, it will be only to the tier one board members, but if we publish anything, it'll be one through four. Now, do we need any other intermediate ones, any subdivisions in those or anything? But, I mean, the members wouldn't know when you said, I think this is a level, if you would just say at a board meeting when we get new members on the board, this is a level five event, they need to know what the hell a level five event is.
Yeah.
But as far as public, you know, the line would be drawn at four, which was what exactly, that's the... epitome of civil defiance, where you stand there
right.
And, you know, the ball's in their court now.
Tim. So the only, I don't have any problems. I like that degree of involvement list. So do we just get eyes on all that, or does anybody else have any changes that they see?
We'll review it and make any comments, get them back to me, and I'll correct it, and we'll get a final version of it out, both the public and a private at that time.
I'll go ahead and throw it on the task list for everybody to take a look at, and let's try to get it done sooner rather than later, but certainly before maybe the next call.
Yep, that's what I'd like to have.
Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, then now we're on to individual tasks.
Okay. I kind of got carried away sending out the draft job descriptions into the PowerPoint, which I think we've already done a few comments on. The latest version has been sent out, and it's also tucked up in the Dropbox if you want to pull it from there.
I think we have 2 points that are still open on that, correct?
One of which is a comment, Freedom Fighter.
And the other one is the use of the term coalition.
Yeah. So why don't we jump on, let's see, do we have time or do we want to table that till the next one? Because I think we're down under 15 minutes now.
I'd like to get, I think this PowerPoint is important. I think, and we want Tim's involvement.
Yeah, well, she just called me and she's lost, so she's going to be another half hour, 45 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Okay, then let's start with Freedom Fighter. If everybody is still good on time.
I am.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Ryan, you got the ball. It was your turn, and what do you think?
Okay, so I know you guys have probably already seen my reply to Tim's assertion, and also, I'll point out before I go into it that I'm not, you know, adamantly attached to the term freedom fighter. I prefer the term freedom fighter for myself as opposed to patriot or any other term, quite honestly, because the reason that I enlisted in the military and all of my extra vocational endeavors since then have been geared in securing freedom, defending liberty, fighting in that sense of things. And so, you know, it doesn't really have anything to do with country at that point to me or to any entity. It has to do with liberty and justice for all. So that, and which personifies the term freedom fighter in the sense of its definition. And so I identify with it. I know that there are other people that identify with it as well. But I also understand the counterpoints to it. For instance, the guys that we've been fighting for years over in the Middle East call themselves freedom fighters. So you have that guilt by association thing there, where are we Islamic radicals? Well, and that type of thing. Or are we radicals in any sense of the word? The answer to that is probably yes. But at any rate, so I understand the aggressive connotations that the word can take. And I guess I'll just leave it at that. That, you know, it is a word I identify with, and that's why I put it in there. But it was written a couple years ago, and there was much less attention paid to the public, what the public perception would be.
I'm inclined, you know, basically, except for the Tier 1 and Tier 2, everybody involved is volunteers.
Well, we're all volunteers, but there's just different levels of responsibility, perhaps.
Well, no, we're part of the organizational structure. The rest of the people that would respond to a call would be volunteers.
I guess okay. I was using volunteer kind of in the broad sense that none of us have been drafted or paid to do this.
Well,
right.
You're right in that respect, but, you know, I kind of agree with Tim that the public image, I mean, people will understand that we're all freedom fighters. That's why they're going to follow OMD unless they're working for the government, just keeping track of us. And but, you know, if we're going to be...
Yeah, and the media, the other, you know, they'll spin the living crap out of anything they can.
Right.
Yeah.
So for... public appearance, my opinion is scratch that phrase.
So what are we going to use in lieu of that phrase?
Concerned citizen.
Yeah, I mean, you have, what did it say at the top of that mission statement? It says militiamen, patriots.
So that pretty much covers freedom fighter anyway.
How about just patriots?
Yeah, concerned citizens. You know, you don't have to be a militia member or anything else. You just need to be a concerned citizen. That's what I am down here, you know. I'm not a militia. I'm a concerned citizen.
You know, I prefer a little stronger of a patriot or true patriots or something like that, somewhere in between the two.
How about we use both? We could use concerned civilians and local patriots.
Yep.
How does that sound, guys?
I would use citizens, not civilians.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you put concerned citizens, that's every nationality, race, and everything else.
And then in the second line would be local patriots, which may indeed be the same thing, but it's a different phrase.
Well, in the media mindset, patriot is your basic right-wing, white, nut, gun job person. So concerned citizen involves everybody. So.
Yep. So would we be okay with concerned citizens and local, second point would be local patriots?
Why put local in there?
Because we use it in the mission statement. The idea is we're not out of town just rolling in to take over, I think.
Well, we're going to be rolling. The patriots who went to the Bundy Ranch weren't local by a long shot.
Yeah.
They came from a far, far away.
Yeah, you could probably omit local. I think probably to all concerned. I don't. Does the mission statement really need who it's directed at? That would be a question I'd have to ask. Is it has a who, what, where, when, and why? But does it? You know, I just put at the top of it who it was directed at the beginning because it was released in the form of a press release.
Well, I think...
Okay, I'll tell you what, let's start with the mission statement and go down next line to the who. We all like the mission statement. If I pull out the word local, I'm kind of presuming you're all looking at it.
See, patriotic citizens. We were going to change that to concerned citizens. And
let's go to the one above it, the second slide. We're going to take and get rid of the local and assist local patriots in the third line, and leave it to assist patriots.
Okay. Yes.
Or do we want to just change that to concerned citizens?
Well, concerned citizens or concerned patriots, I think, are a step beyond. And if we're going to go somewhere, Kevin Bundy is not a concerned citizen. He's a patriot. You know, I think that the whole issue is the focus point, the individual that whose property, life, or liberty we're protecting is a patriot at that point, not just a citizen.
It's an earned monster, basically.
My thing is if it's going to be, you know, released to public, is that some people might not consider themselves to be patriots, but they are a concerned citizen, and we're trying to, like we were talking about, we're trying to re-educate the mass of the population.
Yes, but we're on page two. We're control resources to assist. So we're talking about the Clive and Bundy.
Yeah. Well, then concerned citizen wouldn't be in there. It would be,
three. We're on page two, third line.
Okay.
Assist local patriots.
Yeah.
So to assist patriots, whether they're local.
Well, I would just say they don't have to be patriots. They could be just local citizens that are having a problem with the federal government. I need assistance.
They're willing to call us in, they're patriots because they're willing to fight for it. They're willing to take the risk inherent with OMD coming on their property.
Okay.
That's my feeling. I mean, you have two classes, concerned citizens and Tea Party people. Tea Party is beginning to change. They've invited Ritzheimer to speak. One of the Arizona Tea Parties has invited Ritzheimer to speak on Veterans Day on the 11th. There's a transition. The patriots are ones that know where they stand. Concerned citizens are the ones, to me, are the ones still observing, trying to decide, you know, where to go. They're partially over the fence.
I'm trying to pull up the document here, but where we're talking about it is in a specific context.
Yeah, page two, mission statement. First page of the mission statement. Operation Mutual Defense recruits, trains, and provides the necessary command and control resources to assist. And the question is, local patriots or just patriots in the defense of their lives, individual liberties, and property?
To assist. I don't know if just the word citizens might suffice there.
Well, that's what we're discussing. Is it citizens or is it patriots? A patriot is somebody that's willing to stand for what he believes. A citizen is just an onlooker at this point, isn't he?
And yeah, and this this thing is geared, like, for instance, we would send this powerful presentation directly to a prospective requester, right?
Well, every patriot's a citizen.
But not every citizen's a patriot.
Yeah, but any citizen in need of help would get the help.
Well, let's look at Phil Lyman, for example. He's a citizen now. He's a patriot if he takes a stand. Same with the Hammonds. He's just a citizen, and he's going to subject himself to the powers that be. But he's a patriot when he's willing to stand.
Yeah, well, I guess the question is, does he really need to be labeled such? And I agree with that. You know, they've earned the moniker once they've agreed to make that stand. But do we necessarily need to incorporate that into our explanation of what we're doing?
Well, I think it's more definitive because they realize that they're going to have to take a stand. And I don't know. To me, I think patriot, just the only thing that needs to change is remove local.
Okay, so we have the two. I guess we'll, Tim, you wanted to say just concerned citizens?
Well,
and what's that?
In replacement of a freedom fighter.
Well, we're on page two, though, now.
Right, I understand that.
Okay.
That's where the only spot I think concerned citizens would be.
Oh, okay. So in reference to the PowerPoint deal where it says this in support of concerned citizens or in support of patriots, now we're talking about changing it to... It had in their local patriots, right?
And I'm just recommending we remove the local.
Right.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Okay, now we go to the hard one, page three. Okay. Whether or not we need a WHO, if we do, taking it from some of Ryan's previous work, I used a network and coalition of state militias that include. Now, there was questions about coalition, and there was also questions about, you know, freedom fighters. So I guess we can start with the coalition one first because it's moving down the slide. So do we just want a network of state militias?
Well, my concern with coalition is that a conspiracy then? And we're not a coalition, really, because when they came together at Bundy Ranch, they became a coalition of individuals. the idea is if, you know, Ohio militia sent five people out there, they came out as individuals. They could retain their structure, but each of them enrolls in the Bundy militia. The coalition might give a handle for the government to say this is a conspiracy.
Well, do we want to say coalition of individuals or network of individuals?
A network of state apostrophe. Actually, I don't know if they're state militias. A network of militias that include. But coalition, you know, I don't want to open the door for them to charge a conspiracy. And really, we're not a coalition. We're a network. That the idea, in a way, we're like the Committee of Correspondence of Sam Adams. Well, actually, it goes back to the 1765, but it's a network of communication. So it's a network.
Okay, so a network of communications instead of militias?
Well, network of militias.
Okay.
A network of militias and individuals, and then all your media relations, all that type of stuff.
Yep. So it would be a network of militias that include, colon, concerned citizens, local patriots, journalists, and media relations personnel from patriotic political activism groups.
Well, how about a network of militias that also includes?
Okay.
Okay, now let's get into the three bullet points there. Concerned citizens, I think, is better than patriotic civilians there. Isn't that what we... Civilians,
yeah,
or citizens. Citizens have, by definition, are protected by the government and have an obligation to protect the government or the country or the Constitution in our case. So concerned citizens, individual patriots instead of freedom fighters.
I like that, I think, better than freedom fighters. What do you think, Tim?
I like it better than freedom fighters.
So individual concerned citizens, individual patriots, and journalists and media relations personnel from patriotic political activism groups.
Yeah, that ought to put the biggest target on our backs.
Yeah, our friends are journalists, which they can be if you do it right.
Yeah.
Okay, there were 19 slides there. We've kind of hammered out two of them. Anything else that stood out?
I think the rest were, you know, I'd recommended and you incorporated the remainder of the changes, at least in my notes. I don't know if everybody has gone through them since you made that revised copy.
I was just trying to pull up the revised copy. I can't do it while we're on the call, but I saw all of your changes, Gary, and I didn't disagree with any of them.
Okay, then what I'll do is I'll go ahead and replace the one that's up there with this latest one, leaving draft on. If everybody could take a look at it, again, sooner rather than later, but perhaps by the next call. You know, we all got busy schedules and things. And if there's anything that cries out in shame or anything else, send an email and we'll see if we can fix it.
All right.
Okay. So then where are we at? Let's see here.
Okay, we're back on the individual task list. Okay, job divisions and everything, we got that. You're doing the potential response matrix, Ryan. You're working on that one.
Correct.
Gary had taken over the design, the logo, and the letterhead.
Yeah, and I think on the letterhead, to give it the degree of authority, we need to have the web page up, and we also have to have the officers, not necessarily by name, but by email address. So now we get to the email addresses. I left a message for Dave Thursday or Friday, and I haven't heard back from him. I'll call him again this afternoon. I couldn't call him before the meeting because I think he sleeps in on Sundays and he's on the same time zone we are. You know, I talked to him. He was going to get it done, but he's never responded to me. And you know, I could go play around with it and see if it works or not, or I can get him to say yes, it's done. So I'll try and do that, and I'll let everybody know and give you your email addresses and passwords once I get an answer from him.
Okay, that sounds good. The next one was applicant information for potential board members, particularly research. I think it was Wells who was going to be maybe considered for that.
Yeah, and I spoke with him a few days ago, and he would prefer to be a source, you know, for individual questions or gaps that are missing in information. He doesn't want any direct affiliation with any type of entity. He has a conflict.
Okay, well,
so
he's
an asset, and I would, well, you know, he's agreed to have that specifically those conversations with me, but I would be inclined to pass him along to you, Dennis, because you'll probably know how to talk to him better.
Well, if he's okay with that, why don't you provide him my information, and if he's comfortable, have him contact me, and we'll see where it goes. If not, I mean, rather than lose a source, well, we work them through who they're comfortable with. We have to.
Right.
And I suspect Good.
He's got a pretty illustrious resume from what I've been able to gather, and he is a good source. So, but and it would be, I think he'd be the perfect type of guy to have on the darn board. But his wife is involved with a upper level governmental agency, to put it that way.
Well, let me ask you: this becomes a concern. Is he willing to fill out the application with the understanding that he will not be a member, but so that we have that background information on him, or not?
No, he wouldn't. He would not have his name connected to anything. So he's not going to put his name on a paperwork as an application.
Extreme reluctance in talking anything critical with him.
Yeah, well, you know, along the same lines, it's been he's been a guy where a general statement can be made, and he can deduce a lot from it and offer up a lot of perspective. If anything was taken to him that was of a sensitive nature, I guess we'd just have to talk about it amongst ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, if we can talk with him generally, but, you know, just like the informant in the Hutterly Militia was the best man at the leader of the Hutterly Militia's wedding. You know, people can get close, and so I think that, you know, that anything that we consider confidential should not be presented to him in any specific terms, perhaps general terms only.
Sure. Yeah, which he almost asked for in similar words was, you know, try to leave him the gaps and he'll fill in what he can. Anyway, yeah, if anything was felt to be sensitive or whatever, then I'll just, you know, get approval from more than myself for seeking his guidance. And I will pass your information along, Dennis, to him.
And like I say, if he's comfortable, he'll make contact. If he's not, well, okay. That's the way the world works.
Well, if he's working for the government, he'll make contact. That's the concern.
Yep. Well, that's true, too. Well, do we want to compartmentalize him just with Ryan?
I think that might be best. I don't think he needs
to. Because I'm good either way.
That might be best, and until we find somebody that's got his capabilities is willing to come on board. You know, we have no idea. I mean, Ryan trusts this guy, but, you know, trust is one of the keys in counter-espionage, gaining the trust of the people.
Well, and I don't know that I say I trust him. You know, there's a lot of people that I talk to about this or that I'm just listen to what their answers are, regardless of whether I take it one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And I would put him in that boat.
Why don't we just leave him as a resource on your side then?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
And he's not to know who any of the other players are.
So what's that, Dennis?
That works for me.
Okay.
I mean, whatever's going on in the group.
I don't have any other applications back. I did give one to Patricia Aiken, who we heard speak earlier, and she has said that she'll be filling it out. For either way, I explained the tier deals to her, and she said that was fine. So anyway, that's all the applications I have out.
Well, that's pretty much everything on the list.
What about Sabrina? Did you send her one?
I've sent her one, her and Patrick one, Jason Patrick. I haven't received one from either one of them.
Okay, then we would move to reports and functional areas. Well, I've pretty much covered everything I wanted to talk about. How about you, Gary? Anything else?
Well, I think that, you know, if anybody has ideas to what do we want on the web page, we need to address that. We need to get a web page up. Do we want to discuss it now? I mean, a discussion would be obviously one of them. A history, which would be have a page on the Bundy Ranch and how successful that operation was. You know, ongoing events, the Tucson veterans. What all do we want on the web page? You know, I don't know that much about what Jerry Bruckhart set up on the old one. I don't think it's up anymore, so I can't go back and look at that. But what do we want on the web page?
I think we might be able to mine some of the stuff we did on the mission and organization, because I think there needs to be a mission and organization, if not page, at least section, so that they have an idea of what we're supposed to be doing and kind of how we do it. Maybe not everything we've had in the brief, but some of it.
Well, yeah, and the first page on the old OMA site was the mission statement itself. And then there was some personal remarks that Jerry had made up that just explaining what it was that we intended to do. But they were kind of outlining a generic response, and so I don't know if that's necessary. Probably, I would say the best way to look at it is what specific pages we want at the headings, and then that makes it a lot easier to incorporate them from there. So you have a home page, and then
the main page, and we have the mission statement, and also a link to download the PowerPoint when it's completed.
I think that would work, because it gives its mission and organization. We can maybe even put, you know, another statement or something in front of it, just kind of an introduction, but that we can work on.
Have you guys all seen Arizona Border Recon's website?
Yep.
I have, but I can't bring it to mind on top of my head. I'll have to go look at it again.
Well, I mean, I like it because, you know, basically it is the logo and everything up front, and then there's a drop-down banner where you can go anywhere and anywhere to your other pages, and it might give you some ideas on how to set up the page.
Well, as far as setting up the page, the next element is we decide what's on the front page, and then at the top have a series of tabs, history, more detail about ongoing.
Yeah, we have one up there that's intelligence. We have one that's volunteer. We have one that is contact us. We have one that is about us. So that's where when you go to the about us, it has mission statement and who, basically what we just covered. But I mean, just in case you're running into idea of blockage on how you want it to look or what you want it to look, it's clean, it's quick, it's easy. Anybody can navigate it.
Well, let me, I'll come up with a schematic before the next meeting then.
Okay, Gary, you got that as a duty then. Web page layout.
Oh, that was easy.
Yep.
I was trying to get out of it, but I couldn't. Tim just talked about his days.
Nope.
He must have been in the Army.
Okay. With Gary now, when do we want to have these calls each week? Are we going to do them every Sunday at what time?
Isn't this the time we decided on? Does this work for everybody?
Well,
yeah.
I thought we were going to do 11 Eastern Standard. So this would be 1 Eastern Standard, and that works too. I just need to kind of know so I can plan around the wife and, you know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I thought it was 11 Eastern, so I was kept calling the number at 8 o'clock this morning down here. I was going, what the hell? And then I looked and saw the email this morning and went, oh, I got 2 more hours.
Well, if we do it at 8, I eat breakfast at 9 Pacific time. And that's a,
so does that mean we blow through it a lot faster?
No, it means we'll probably stop it in the middle.
Either that, or you're gonna go on a diet.
We're 2.5. No, that's family. I do everything I do for family.
Okay. Well, no, I mean 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time is fine. We just need to make sure we all communicate, and that way we know, and we can all schedule it. It works for me. I just need, to know which time.
Well, Ryan, is the time we had for today's meeting okay with you and Tim?
Fine with me.
Yeah, I mean, what is it? In 2 weeks, it's going to bump an hour for me, so that'll put it at 11 o'clock.
Yeah, it'll put 11 o'clock on November 1st or 3rd or whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah. Since we're the only sane people in the country who don't play with their clocks.
Yeah, I wish I was you.
In my office says 11:26.
It
says 12:29.
And you got to thank the farmers for that one here. They went up against it and told them, screw you, we don't need another hour of heat in the middle of summer.
I think the people were opposed to it. I think the government wanted to show that they had the power.
And Arizona.
The history of it, and you know, it seems the city people were looking out for the country people.
Nice of them.
So it sounds agreed that we're going to do 1300 Eastern Standard Time.
Okay.
Roger that.
That works. Okay, moving on. Tim, you're up.
All right, training, I've got it outlined, but I want to also put in, you know, actually what's, you know, I've got it broken down into blocks of what I think critical training is. And then underneath that, I got to put subcategories of what's going into that and break it down into, you know, layman's terms. So I'm still moving ahead on that. This last week, I had buku problems on the website. The guy who left the organization a month or so ago put a bug in our application process. And so when people filled out the application, they were hitting the send button and it was giving them a message saying it was sent, but actually it was just deleting them. So I've been on the phone for days with my internet guru long distance, and he's finally fixed that, and he's fixed the email problems I'm having with my website and everything else. But I should have sent out in the mail that one before the next meeting on the codes for communications. I've come up with some. I'm thinking, you know, just as a for instance, let's say you're out on somebody's property doing, protecting from the BLM or something, and you've got the BLM moving around. You don't go, hey, I got the feds moving around. You would classify them as an animal that is native to that area. Then you would say, hey, I got a jackrabbit on the move or something like that, and that would just... That would coincide with whatever animals are native in that area, so you would classify federal agents basically as a animal, so that if they are listening, it might take them a while to figure out that they're a jackrabbit.
Tim, I'll send you over a list of the brevity codes I can remember from, for instance, you know, things like Aboris. Aboris is a salute report, and they're all five-letter, non-repeating letter words.
Right.
Right. I'll send you over a list of what I can recall, and I know I can probably get a full list from one of my buddies. So I'll send you over that here
okay.
in a couple days.
All right. Yeah, yeah. Sooner the better than the I can start working on that one. So,
okay, and then we would move to Brian. Tim, you got anything else? Sorry.
Well, I'm just going to say that, you know, so I'll get out the what I consider to be key training within the next before the next meeting.
Is that training that you're talking about on the now? Is that specific to the operation that we're talking about down there, or is that stuff for OMD volunteers, like kind of like a?
It can be utilized everywhere and anywhere.
So that would probably be a sanctioned event with Arizona Border Recon.
Yeah,
they can train here, or they can train here. They can pay to send us out there, or whatever.
Yeah, at least initially to get it started, we could call it a sanctioned event supporting a training program put out by ABR.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's go.
Anything else, Kim?
Patricia Aiken.
Oh, sir.
She kept saying OMD. We've got to find people the BTFA page. I've got one idea, and I'll give him a call. I just thought of him this morning. He might have some resources that want to contribute. He was in the Silicon Valley industry, and he might have some people that want to contribute to BTFA. But you know, think about what Patricia said, and see if we want to set that up. But it would be BTFA rather than OMD.
Yep. Well, you let them know that for about $5 million, I can secure about 10 miles of the border and put about house about 100 plus veterans.
Yeah, well, I don't think we'll see that kind of money soon.
No. Well, it's always wishful thinking.
Yeah.
I think we will.
You know,
depending on your definition of soon.
Yeah.
Okay, Tim,
what?
Gary, anything else?
No.
Okay, moving on to Ryan. Anything that you've got?
I guess we're going with response coordination. Is that where we're at?
Well, yep, like I say, anything that you didn't cover before.
No, I'd say we're probably pretty good and up to speed on that then. I am in the process still of inserting information into the matrix, and as soon as I have it presentable, I'll forward it on to you guys. Let's see here. So, impression. Graduate Hammond, Michael Varga. Nope, I'd say we're pretty good.
Okay, kind of around the table. Any newer emerging issues?
Yeah, my wife.
No.
Lunch.
I need to get a. Yes, it is. I'm going to be forwarding the email from Patricia onto the OMD AB board, and then I will also forward. I guess you know what. Gary, I'll go ahead and send out an email just that has the a preliminary page set up for the website, and then we can keep it going in that string if we want to.
Okay.
So you could actually put that under me if you wanted, Dennis, and I'll have that out.
Okay.
Because I've already got something down here for it.
Okay. Anything else from Ryan?
That's it.
Okay. Gary, anything new or emerging that we haven't covered?
No, that's it.
Tim, anything new and emerging we haven't covered?
That's negative, sir.
Okay.
Hey, Tim, can you forward to the AB email address the Patriotic Warriors crowdfunding deal you were talking about?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I can do that.
Gentlemen, I've got to adjourn. My wife is going to be on my case in a minute.
Okay, and I would suggest maybe if we can in the future keep these to about an hour, hour and a half.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yep.
Okay, Ryan, it's up to you to say adjourn and we're done.
We never, at the beginning, trying to get things done and hashing out arguments and conversations on things, I imagine we'll end up going over here and there, and especially when we discuss when we get into discussions about particular issues and their complexities and such, I foresee it some conversations going over that. But I would definitely agree that keeping it short and sweet on our weekend as much as we can, as long as we get everything done, is a good idea. I think we got plenty accomplished today as well, and this last week. So we're moving along pretty well, and I will keep up on the with these guys, put in some calls to some of those gentlemen that I haven't talked to in a few weeks and get a status update and hopefully put that all on the response matrix that I forward to you guys before the next meeting. And if nobody else has anything to add, then I'd say thank you, gentlemen, and I'm sure I'll talk to you this week.
Ryan, send that stuff to Clive and see if we can figure out who Raven is, too.
Okay, yep, that's another one. Thank you.
Hey, bye, all.
Bye.
Good. See you next week.
Till next week.